9, 10.
Today is July 28th, 1998, and I am Betty Meyer, a volunteer interviewer for the Germans from Russia Heritage Collection of North Dakota State University Libraries in Fargo, North Dakota. And it's a pleasure to have visiting with us Sister Carmen Madigan. And we are in Mankato, Minnesota at the Good Council. And so we're going to get started with the interview. And I'm going to have you say your name so we get it right.
I'm Sister Carmen Madigan.
And the date of your birth?
It is November 26, 1917.
And
I'm 30 years old.
It's unbelievable. Where were you born?
I was born in Madison Lake, a small town in Minnesota, about 9 miles from Mankato.
Were you born in a hospital, or were you born at home?
No, I was born at home.
Uh-huh. Was there a midwife then?
No, there was a doctor.
Oh, there was a doctor. Physician, huh? What's your nationality?
I'm Irish.
All Irish? 100%?
Yes. Third, I guess, generation American. My great-grandparents and one great-great came from Ireland.
Uh-huh. And did they come to Minnesota?
I think at first they worked on the Burlington Railroad, and that group that worked there traveled and finally settled around like St. Peter and mm-hmm. Madison Lake and Mankato.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of your father?
Henry.
Henry Madigan. And your mother's maiden name?
Was Nell. I think Ellen was probably the official one,
uh-huh.
but she was called Nell.
And her maiden name?
Brown, B-R-O-W-N.
Did you have any siblings, brothers and sisters?
Oh, yes. I am from a family of six, so I had two sisters and three brothers.
And what placement were you in the family?
I was oldest.
Very oldest.
Yes.
Were there other members of your family that went into the religious life?
No.
You were the only one.
I think some cousins that I didn't know very well of my mother's.
Were your parents supportive of you going into the sisterhood?
They didn't really support it, but they didn't fight it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just like you're on your own.
Were you influenced by anybody to enter the religious life?
Well, influenced, but in the right way.
Uh-huh.
I don't mean pressured or spoken to in a real direct way. I was, I went really because of the role model of the sisters who taught at that school at Madison Lake, which, by the way, is still in existence.
Mm.
I think it's over 100 years old. Catholic school.
And so were they the sisters of Notre Dame?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they were the role model for you then to go into. Did your local pastor have any influence on you?
Really, no. He was very remote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's none of your other siblings that have followed you?
No.
Into religious life. Did you ever think about leaving what you were leaving behind?
Oh, yes. Yes. I thought of it.
Social aspects.
Mm-hmm.
How old were you when you...
I was just 18. I just graduated from high school.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, which now would be almost intolerable because now the women who join our order are required to have their degree or else some career be established. And but in those days, the rest of who entered the convent with me were all about 18,
mm-hmm.
17.
Mm-hmm. When you came to the convent, then you weren't too far away from home, so you didn't have distance. But were you able to visit your family at any time after you came in?
We had what they called visiting Sundays. We entered August 27th, and we were not permitted a visiting Sunday like September because it was too close to when we came,
mm-hmm.
I said. So the first time we could visit was October, and it was very structured. we could visit, I think it was from 1 to 4 in the afternoon, which, well, for me, didn't make that much difference, but for some of the young women who were in the class with me had parents in the Twin Cities, and their parents, because of the, you know, public transportation, didn't even own cars. So they had to come by train, and the train didn't get here when our visiting hour started.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were, I always felt so bad for them, because they were really cut off in the length of time mm-hmm. they could visit.
Mm-hmm. Did your brothers and sisters then come and visit too?
Oh yes, at the permitted time. Mm-hmm. Not everybody every time, because they all had their obligations.
Mm-hmm. Surely. Do you remember what items you brought with you to the convent?
Oh, we weren't permitted to bring very much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
No, no. We wore black dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have a stock list of things to bring. Very difficult to find, like, cotton, black cotton stockings and that. So my mother said she'd have nothing to do with it, that I should buy them up here.
Mm-hmm.
So she called and just asked them to. Really, which meant that I didn't bring any clothing along that I had used.
Uh-huh.
None.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall what the daily schedule was after you got here? Were you...
It was very early and very structured. I think, by hindsight, I'm not sure when we got up, but I know it felt very, very early. We had Mass, I believe, at 8 o'clock, after which we had breakfast, and then immediately after that, we started our classes for the day. And the classes were pretty... They pretty well filled the day. We had recreation in the evening from 6 to 7. We ate our supper from 5:30 to 6.
Mm-hmm. And did you go to bed early then if you had to get up early in the morning?
Yes, yes, we really did. I believe we were supposed to be in bed by 10 o'clock. I think we went upstairs. Undressed. I think our study hall was until 9:30.
Oh.
So no, until 9, mm-hmm. and then we were to be in bed by 9:30.
Mm-hmm. Did you have friends that you left behind that you wrote letters to?
Oh, I had friends I left behind, but no, we weren't permitted to write letters to friends.
Mm.
So it was hard to keep in touch, but we did.
Mm-hmm. Remember getting homesick?
Oh, yes.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did you do then? Did you get busy with something else, or?
We didn't do anything special about it.
You didn't?
No, it wasn't really recognized to any great extent. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you just worked through it.
Mm-hmm. What, it seems that you graduated from high school. So what was your curriculum like when you say classroom structure, classroom studies?
In the school that I graduated from?
Yes. What were your studies?
Here in the convent,
yeah.
you mean?
Oh, here in the convent
yeah.
were my studies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We started out, it was rather backwards, but we started with our 101 philosophy. Really, we were all too young for that,
mm-hmm.
but I sort of liked it. And we took German as a foreign language, which I didn't like at all. And we had a history, English literature, convent life, theology.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine you had quite a bit of study with some of those.
Very much studying, and we had math, we had calculus.
Way back then, huh?
You got into the heavies right away.
Oh yes.
which makes me believe or ask a question. When you got into those kind of heavy subjects, were you ever asked to move out of a class, or Was this class too much for you?
No, I guess I wished I had been asked to about some of them. No, I had a good preparation, and I had a good high school education. For my first 3 years of high school, I was in a private Catholic high school in Madison Lake, which they had a small parish Catholic high school. It was small, and it closed the summer before I was a senior. So then I went to Mankato High School. At that time, we just had one high school in Mankato. Mm-hmm. Now they have two, but it was just one.
That's interesting. Philosophy and calculus are not easy subjects.
Without good teachers,
yeah,
everyone would have floundered.
Yeah.
It was a priest taught the philosophy class, the chaplain up here, Father Shai, taught that. And calculus was a sister, well, they all were sisters of priests, Sister Devota, who was an excellent mathematics teacher, so that she began and led up to it in such a way that
comprehended.
It was challenging.
So when what is the steps in the length of time for a postulant did you go through?
We stayed here for 1 year, the year that I entered. We entered August, and we stayed here through that first year. We had some classes in the summer also. And then the next year, you did your student teaching. That was the summer preparation, was quite a little bit we had for student teaching. I did student teaching the next year, after which the program was that you prepare to go to the novitiate and stay in the novitiate next year. I, however, didn't feel prepared to go to the novitiate, so I did a second year of student teaching. And then after that year, went to the novitiate.
And where did you do your student teaching?
I did that at St. Francis School in St. Paul.
Mm-hmm. So then you came back here and you had the novitiate.
That's right. Yeah. After 1 year of classes, 2 years of student teaching, and a summer of preparation, then I went to the novitiate.
Mm-hmm. And that whole year was spent here then?
That's right.
Good counsel.
Yes.
When did you say your final vows then?
In 1946 was my final vows. In 1940, my first vows. We took vows for 3 years, and then had a decision time and another retreat. Then we took them for a second 3 years. So it was 1940, 1943, and 1946. Mm-hmm. And 1946 was my final vows. But I had already been, at that time, I had been teaching for 6 years.
Oh.
In addition to that, the 2 years of practice teaching. Mm-hmm. But I'd been teaching on my own for 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All at St. Francis?
No. After my student teaching, and then I went through novitiate and took my vows. After that, I went several places. I taught most of the time at St. Agnes High School in St. Paul.
And you taught what?
I've been an English and speech teacher until I started working part-time administration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you recall the ceremony that you went through when you did your final vows, the spiritual part of it and the physical part of it?
It was preceded by the entire summer of preparation. We came in to the Mother House in June, I think, sometime in June. And our retreat was usually sometime mid-July. I actually took my final vows on July 22nd. So the time from school out until July 22nd was spent in intensive preparation.
Mm-hmm.
The same was true of first vows.
Now let's go to, you said you spent 1 year at Strasburg, North Dakota. Now, you had come from St. Agnes.
Right.
Which is a high school in St. Paul. Was it more or less middle class?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. And then you went to the rural community in Strasburg. What was the contrast between those two?
It was my first years of teaching at St. Agnes. It was wartime. See, that was from 1940 to 43, 4, and then 5, about. And at that time, there was scarcity of many products. Like, I can remember for paper used in school, they even used the backs of calendars and everything like that. Because there was real scarcity and a real awareness that our country needed all the help we could get.
Mm-hmm.
There was a real spirit like that in the students and the parents and the sisters. And we were sending care packages to our sisters in Poland and Germany, I think, just wrapping those. I remember just wrapping those. I don't even remember what was in them,
mm-hmm.
but I do know we sent them. Then by the time I got to Strasburg, that was the year of 47, 48. By the time I got there, the war had ended. And so the whole country was a bit more prosperous.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that affected me much at all, but it was the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I really left, when I left St. Agnes, I had not finished my degree. Because we had a certificate to teach, which was a wartime certificate. Many of the men teachers and women too had gone to war and to service, and so there was a very great scarcity of teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And we were urged, if we were pursuing a college degree, to get one of these certificates and to teach. The need for teachers was great. I had that. I was attending St. Catherine's College on Saturdays and sometimes like Wednesday nights and that, as well as teaching 5 English classes with 30 in every class, 150 total. And I never had any time to prepare for my classes at St. Agnes until Friday night. So that was an intensive night of preparation, you may be sure.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went out there and I was gone almost all day. So.
Hmm.
By hindsight, you don't know how you did it, but when you do it, you're young as well.
So when you were in Strasbourg then, was life a little simpler, or was it harder, or how did you find living in the convent there? Were there other sisters?
Oh, yes. We had a convent of sisters. I don't know for sure, but I think something like 8
mm-hmm.
might have been there. In fact, we had almost no lay teachers in the school, if I remember correctly. Usually there was a man to teach Fayette or something like that. Now, there may have been some, but I just don't remember. It was basically all sisters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you have a language problem? You said you took German in high school. Did you have a language barrier when you got to Strasbourg with any of the
German that I took had faded completely out of my mind. That was about 7 or 8 years away.
Uh-huh.
And I felt that I have a right to speak English, and if you want to speak German, well, go ahead, but I can't join. But in school, of course,
uh-huh.
we
uh-huh.
didn't. There were many ways in which it did indirectly affect me. The students came from homes that had been Germans, that were German speaking, and it set them back, because I know our first grade teacher, who was an excellent teacher, Sister Anaclete, said that she couldn't begin even the preschool work until the semester of the first grade. She knew German. So she was able to go in both directions. But they hadn't spoken any English at home.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that meant she was working. It wasn't that the children weren't bright enough to get it, but she was working behind schedule almost all the way. And I think, I know there's a big question of bilingual, but I really do think the way it was done there, it was bound to make it academically difficult for the students. We had, in addition to the regular parishioners and so on in the school, I don't know of anybody that wasn't Catholic that was Russian German. I don't remember there was. But we had some Dutch Reformed students. Dutch Reformed was their religion. They must have been from some little town around. I don't know that they lived in Strasbourg. But they were English-speaking, totally, all the way through, and fine students, and also very, very good people to deal with. They added, in my estimation, they added a lot to the school. They were better students, just overall, no, not just everyone, but overall, they had the advantage of English-speaking parents and speaking English from them. So I think there was a little jealousy there by the other students. They thought these students were being marked advantageously. Wasn't true at all.
No, no. There's still a lot of the Dutch Reform families there.
That's interesting. Are they farmers?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Nice, clean farms.
All
progressive farms.
I would assume that because I do remember them from school.
The farmers now, though, are struggling more, I'm sure, than some previous years. Did you have any interactions with parents when you were there?
As I thought back on that question, almost none. Mm-hmm. Almost none. When I think of parent-teacher conferences now and so on, we never had anything like that at all.
Didn't have?
I'm sure there were 90% of the parents I never met.
Hmm. Did you teach there during the summer then?
No, after? I didn't. During the summer vacation, I did have my degree by then, but I took summer school classes or something. They had all classes here. No, I didn't stay there all summer.
Let's go into some of the anti-garb. I know you were before the anti-garb,
right.
But you must have experienced some of the effects of it. Now, North Dakota was the only state that had the ruling that sisters had to wear street clothes at a certain year, but you were there before that year.
Correct.
Do you remember if there was any activities going on before that in preparation for the anti-garb?
We had no preparation. I didn't even know it was a possibility at the time. I had heard nobody talking about it. If we received any communications from the state, I don't remember it. Of course, you said North Dakota was the only place that happened. It was the only state, and that is true. But nowhere else were Catholic schools, public schools, identical, because I was in a public school.
Mm-hmm.
But one would never know it, because everybody there was Catholic except these Dutch Reformed students. Everybody else was Catholic. And consequently, they had to follow the law of the state in that regard. But nowhere else was this being done.
Mm.
So there was no precedent for it at all in our lives, or I think the lives of anybody else.
So when you, where did you go after the year in Strasbourg?
I think I went to St. Michael, Minnesota. There's a high school there, and that's north of Minneapolis a ways.
Mm-hmm. And you were not affected by any of the garb change?
No.
Then,
no.
Until when? Because you look very nice now in your street clothes. You switched them. When did you switch?
Oh, there were many, many years in between. Uh-huh. This was after Vatican II, when the advice was that the sisters should move into more comfortable and less conspicuous clothing. Mm-hmm. This happened a little bit gradually. But it was 1973 before we started wearing street clothes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had the option.
We had the option.
Right.
Did you take that option?
Immediately.
You did. Mm-hmm. But some of the sisters didn't and still don't.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. I know some of the, I've often wondered if when you went out to teach, if you wore street clothes, and then when you came back to the convent, if you changed back to your garb.
No.
No?
No. In my experience, they probably did that in Strasbourg, when they had to wear secular clothes to school.
Yes,
then
early
they
on.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, we never did anything like that.
Is there some other stories that you'd like to, that I haven't asked or questioned about?
I would like to tell you about this. First of all, several things that shocked me and or baffled me. I don't know, it's a mixture of the two words. When I was in Strasbourg,
uh-huh.
In addition to the fact that I came from an area where nobody ever spoke anything but English, mm-hmm. and to hear that I was a little prepared for because the sisters had talked about it here. But as I got to get the feel of the community, this is a strange and a small thing. It really shocked me that the children didn't have their teeth cared for. There was no dentist in Strasbourg, and even some of the high school students had dental dentures.
Mm-hmm.
And the students' teeth were just in terrible condition. As I gathered, a part of this was from the water. But I think something could have been done, something. So I always thought some dentist could get a PhD or a scientist if they'd come here and study that water. But if they had had a dental care constantly, I don't think it would have been that bad. Mm-hmm. There were a few people who, I believe they'd been in Lenten or something before that and then moved in. I don't know it was whether their teeth were cared for in advance, but they didn't have that problem. The sisters never had that problem after we went there.
Do you recall, was there a dentist in town?
No, there was no dentist.
Dentist.
Anyone who went to a dentist went to Linton, and usually that was to have a tooth pulled, no matter how young you were.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was enough to shock.
Yes, that would.
It really was.
I'm trying to recall my own situation. I guess the dentist that I had pulled my teeth too when they were badly decayed. And as teenagers, sometimes that happens. That's interesting. I had never heard that before.
That was very, what was shocking to all the sisters. I don't know what impact it had on some,
mm-hmm.
but I know that it was unbelievable. Never had I even heard of or thought of high school students having a denture.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that now the city, Strasbourg water, is literally condemned. And they have special treatment for their water, and they're finding arsenic and also some other very toxic elements in the water. So your assumption there or finding were very founded in the fact that there was something wrong with the water.
I felt so sorry for those students. I know their parents were in the same
mm-hmm.
condition, but somehow the students were the ones I dealt with, and I thought their whole life is ahead of them. To wear a denture for a whole lifetime seemed a very shocking thing to me, and not to get constant dental care and dental examinations. Even though it was a long time ago, from the time I had been a child, we went to the dentist every year before school started. And we didn't have money, nothing like that, but you just went to the dentist.
That was how about health care, physical health care? When they got sick, they didn't have a doctor in town then either.
No, no, I don't remember a nurse in school either, or a nurse visiting the school. I don't think we had any of that. It's not. And if it was in the state, we would have had it since we were classified as, we were a public school. That was something that really shocked me, and I don't know if I should say I was shocked or baffled or surprised or what.
Yeah.
It was just one of those conditions that
one we're not expected in the United States, but did exist there. And another thing that I found very shocking was that there were families, and I knew that from the sisters, where they married, first cousins married each other, with the result of children who had birth defects. I remember seeing one man, and I saw him because he was a relative of the house sister there who was from the Strasburg area. And his arm, I think his hand came out about here. He didn't have this part of his hand at all. There were very, very serious things like that. And I do remember, see, this sermon was first in German and then in English. Sat there for both of them. And in that sermon, the translated one in English anyway, there were strong warnings, like from the bishops and priests, against this. And that, of course, was new to any of us. I knew that, you know, genetically it was not acceptable. We all knew that from a scientific point of view. But I didn't know it entered the church teaching, but it did. Mm-hmm. And that it was in the church teaching because it was correct scientifically. Mm-hmm. So that the priests weren't trying to, you know, influence people. It has this religious tone. There's no doubt about it. It really isn't right to have that high a possibility of bringing very defective people into the world, and there were mental defects because of that too. So that was, I didn't know, we have lots of sisters from Strasbourg, from the area, and not one of them is affected in that way, but there were people that were. You're nodding. So that I found very, very different.
Do you realize that you're the first one that has brought those two things out?
Really?
Yes, that's really in addition to observations that we've had.
I did learn to understand the Russian Germans of the area through, I went to an elder hostel a few years ago, it was at Crookston, and ethnic groups in the Midwest was the topic. That was a professor from it's University of Fargo or Fargo State University. It was
North Dakota State University.
North Dakota State University.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this professor spoke on that. It was just a wonderful enlightenment. He took the Russian Germans, he took the Ukrainians and Swedes. I think there were some Lithuanians, but not in that area, but I think that was one group that he did talk about. I met him at a kind of intermission one time. I said, I'm really hurt. Oh. I said, you take all these other national groups, you haven't said one thing about the Irish. He said, they stepped off the boat integrated.
Oh, I like that.
I think it was because of the language.
Yeah,
because the Irish came speaking English. It made a whole difference. Mm-hmm.
And plus the fact that the Germans are pretty much, they were colonized. That was their way of life in Russia. And that's the way they did it here too. You know, they came from Strasbourg, Germany. They went to Strasbourg, Russia. They came from Strasbourg, Russia to Strasbourg, North Dakota. So they've always, for how many generations?
Many.
Have always been colonized and always intermarried, you know, within the community.
And I assume that would have been perfectly acceptable genetically if the group was big enough so that relationships didn't enter that. That was one thing that helped me. And another emphasis that he gave it was that they were defending their culture madly and consequently became very provincial. I don't think the students that I had at Strasburg at that time, I don't think they ever really got out and, let's say, got a job in Bismarck. I don't remember that. Or even in the Twin Cities, St. Paul, Minneapolis. I do think that that ended right about that time. But I know that it was not true that they pushed out into any other areas much at the time that I was teaching there. But I'm sure it happened afterwards. The one probably opening that would be different was some of the young men became Benedictine priests.
Mm-hmm.
Then they went to St. John's, and that opened up the whole world to them. And some of the girls went to convents, the Benedictine and school sisters in Notre Dame or something. And that got them out of this real provincial little area.
Another thing I think probably broke through was the war.
That's right. And this teacher did emphasize that. He said there was no holding the young guys who came back from war and really experienced different things. They wanted to work on engineering or something like mm-hmm. that. They recognized.
Plus they had the opportunity to go on to school and have it paid for and got a GI Bill, and they mm-hmm. were able to then go on to college and then took them away from the farm, so to speak.
There was one family, it was an exception. I think their name was Wagner, I'm not sure. But they sent their girls to St. Benedict's College. And I don't know if they had any sons or not, but I do remember that. I think they had moved into the area. And I also remember this woman I talked to as a parent. And I remember that she went to Bismarck to get dental care for her children. So, and I
so
know
she was a little more progressive.
So she felt the same way as I did about the dental care. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is interesting.
I enjoyed that. And I enjoyed that speaker and his classes on this very thing. Now the Ukrainians, many, many things were the same, but they had different emphases, like in art and everything like that. And we had a Ukrainian dinner at the university, cooked by or directed by this same professor. I believe he was Ukrainian.
He was Ukrainian.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I don't think he'd dip into cooking in Ukrainian and directing that.
No, because that's something that's a learned part of your culture.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that just came to my mind when I got this questionnaire, brought it back. I hadn't thought of it for years about the thing of that. And I could, there were, probably not from Strasbourg, but from that area, there are a number of girls who entered our convent. And with the younger ones, it was all the same. But with older people, I think with the older sisters who came from there, I always felt very bad because they came without any even high school education. And because they hadn't had that advantage, very brilliant people were not educated. They just said they didn't want to go to school, or they thought that they shouldn't, or I don't know how it went. And they started doing housework right from the start. They didn't even finish high school, and much less go to college, and they became what we call them, house sisters or housekeepers in the
order.
Do you
think that could be contributed to their parental emphasis?
From home,
uh-huh. The
probably.
Value system.
Probably. Education just wasn't emphasized in their lives. But I think of some of them who just have a natural brilliance, but it never was developed, and it comes through in other ways as they educate themselves, but in other ways it wasn't. That was, and then their, at home, their counterparts who didn't come to the convent, I'm sure they were the same way. Maybe the men got educated later on or something, I don't know. But
I'm not sure if they were educated, because education is not a valued part of the German from Russia culture. I'm sure there's exceptions, mm-hmm. but even as we've looked at North Dakota rural schools, there's been some research done on that.
Currently, you mean?
No. Well, yes, it was. It was brought out in, last year. It was published
in the schools right now.
It was done from the state, and they went way, way back to the beginning of the rural schools,
mm-hmm.
and they were finding that schools in some of the cultural areas valued it less than, we'll say, the Scandinavian counties. They valued it much more.
Well, the Irish had has a big emphasis.
Yes.
We had never as much money as the Germans of the area or other people. We were always more prosperous, I would say. But there never was a question of our going to college. And I'm 80 years old. My mother went to Faribault, to high school. They had an academy in Faribault. Then after that, she came back, and she went to school here in Mankato. It was called the State Normal School at the time. She went there for 2 years and then qualified for teaching at that time. You could do it for 2 years. And my dad went to business college here. I don't know how long. But they had a background considerably better than many other people.
It was never a question then, that was if you go to school, it's when you go to school.
That's right, that's right. And we went right from grade school to high school in the same building there, and then completed high school. And after that, my sister went to college here. She's a year younger than I am. And I didn't go anywhere else, since I went to the convent then for school.
Mm-hmm.
My brothers were drafted into service at that time. So what education they got in service, and then when they came home on the GI Bill, and my sister graduated from St. Benedict's. But we all
went to college.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, sister.
I appreciate it.
It has been great. You've given us some new insights that we have not discussed before. And so it's really been a very good experience. Thank you again.
You're welcome.